If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into episode 3 of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, and Egg is Aegon.
Let's go.
Pretty wild. Matt, I know we're probably going to want to talk some spoiler stuff. Should we wait to the end?
I was thinking about this last night. I don't think we can go spoiler free.
We definitely can.
Okay, let's go spoiler free. The episode is great.
Okay, fine. Let's just talk spoilers. That's fine. If you're a new listener, I'm sorry.
You want to try to do it, but there's too much in it, and our audience is all. And literally, I've gotten comments of people just like, "Bro, just go full spoilers." So,
okay, so you've been warned, folks. If this is your first time watching the show, or you're just now coming to this, leave, because you don't want to get spoiled.
There's too much in this episode. Well, that's fine. We'll go through our notes.
Let's go for it.
Yeah, I mean, for starters, I said last night, because I did our live stream, I walked away from that episode feeling the most excited I've been about an episode since King Viserys's walk. Like, the Rhaenyra dragon fight was epic, right? Rhaenys dragon fight was epic. And we said, man, that's up there when some of the best episodes. I genuinely said last night, and I had people commenting saying they agree, this is like top 10, top 5 Song of Ice and Fire episode for me.
Dang, really?
Dude, yeah, dude, it was amazing. When I texted you last night, because I was like, dude, holy OMFG.
Yeah,
Summerhall, yeah. Dude. I mean,
yeah, definitely. I thought the episode was fantastic, first and foremost. I also, to add an episode to that list, I think that the dragon bonding episode at the end of season 2 is really good. Of House of the Dragon.
They're in the cave. Yes.
Yeah, I feel like that episode is kind of slept on because everyone's like mad about season 2, but like that episode rocked, I thought.
Yeah, that episode is great.
But surely, this is definitely one of those episodes where like you walk away and you're just excited about everything, Westeros. Like, you just really feel it. I think I'd probably put it in my top 15. I don't think it would make my top 10. I would have to really sit down and like think about it. I mean, it's an excellent, it's a 5-star episode, scene, whatever. I think the dialogue was just I really love the writing of this episode. I've liked it all season, but this one, there's just stuff in here that I thought was fabulous. And Egg, lots of Egg this episode. And
he is Egg. I mean,
yeah, he owns that role now. Yeah, he 100%. Owns that role. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Real quick, and I want to keep hearing your initial thoughts since I did mine last night. I read an interview with him today, and maybe I have it saved. I'll try to get it pulled up here real quick. But he was basically saying, he said he's never even seen Game of Thrones because his parents were like, it's too adult.
Oh, he's for so you. Young. Yeah.
He's so young. They said it's too adult for you. And he's it's such a fantastic. Oh, here we go. Dexter Saul on the reveal the egg. Is a Targaryen, which obviously, you know, is not spoilers because we saw at the end. He said, it feels cool. Feels like I'm a dragon. I just want to jump out of my window and go, wee, and breathe fire. It feels exciting to be a Targaryen. I mean, I don't know much about Game of Thrones because I've never watched it, but I think the Targaryens are the best house, in my opinion. When I was reading the scripts and look into it, I found out that I was going to be a Targaryen, and my first thought was, who's a Targaryen? What's a Targaryen? That's a random name. Then my parents told me everything, and I found out it was cool that I was royal.
Love that. I mean, we've seen a lot of people in House of the Dragon as well say they try not to watch the original show because they want to make it their own thing and, you know, also get guided by the directors and whatnot. I think that's a great thing. And, you know, I didn't think about it, but yeah, he is far too young. But this show also had like full frontal nudity. So it's kind of funny that it's a little odd, right? That it's his show, but he probably had to close his eyes during that opening scene, I would imagine. So but he is Egg. You're right. 100% that will, like, Tyrion and Peter Dinklage, Daenerys, Emilia Clarke, that is just how it is, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely phenomenal. So, okay, so I want to keep hearing your initial thoughts before we really get into the nitty-gritty.
The dumbest takeaway I have from this is that I thought the food looked phenomenal. Like, those eggs were so big, and I was like, I'm about to whip up steak and eggs in my kitchen after this. It was fantastic. And I know
you can really see George's influence there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I love the food scenes in the book. I know a lot of people think they're frivolous, but I've always enjoyed them. Eating is one of my favorite things in the world. And I don't know. I just thought the food looked really, really good. Lionel Baratheon, it's hard even whenever he's not like featured and he's just in like a piece of a scene. It's so insane how captivating this actor is. I don't know his name, but he is just knocking it out of the park. Like most of these people, horse scene was really hard to watch. Really hard to watch.
At the end where the horse is killed.
Oh, dude, that hurt my soul. Like, the neighing. It was the neighing. I was like, oh, my God, dude.
But like in Game of Thrones, you see, you know, the horse and he goes over and like cuts its head off, but the tone of Game of Thrones has, by that point, even only a few episodes in, has been set like, oh, this is really brutal.
Yeah.
Because the nature of Egg and his innocence, and he's a young kid, it's so different than the young children we've seen in Game of Thrones and even House of the Dragon, where there's not that in a sense, really. You know what I mean? Like, you don't really ever get to see Bran being like, other than the very beginning, like episode one, where Arya shoots the bow. Mm-hmm. Immediately, all of these children are placed into like really tough situations. So I think it just changes the tone so much of this show that it makes you immediately be pulled back from like the Game of Thrones-ness. It makes those scenes that otherwise would not be as crazy that much more crazy. You know what I mean? Like,
it's 100%. 100%. It's yin and yang as far as just like how the comedy also intertwines with the darkness of Westeros. Like, it's still Westeros. The Targaryens are still insane. They were called incestuous aliens, which I'll circle back to because I think it opens up a pretty interesting question. But I think that the fact that it's balanced, and if you need another example of this, I think a great example would be the prophecy being spoken to Egg and how serious that moment is. And then it's immediately countered by Dunk laughing. And I said I hoped that the humor wouldn't undercut tension. I don't think it did. I actually think that they're placing it so well. It doesn't give me that Marvel quippiness that I dislike in Hollywood that everyone does now. It doesn't feel like that. Yeah, I think just the undercurrent of what Westeros is and the place that it is, the reality that these characters live in with the comedy makes the contrast so much more. I completely agree. Yeah, the horse, dude, I don't know why, man. The horse thing really, really messed me up. I was emotional.
Yeah. Let me pull up some of my notes. And I went over all of them last night, so I don't have to go over all of them. But going off of what you said, where again the horse thing, I think they set up Arian as a villain pretty well in this episode. I don't know, because of the nature of it, if I immediately feel as threatened by him as I did Joffrey or even Kristen Cole, even though I knew what was going to happen to those characters, you know, is and was going to happen to those characters. by reading the books first. So, but I do think he fits the role. He fits the tone, but he's also not nearly as evil of a villain as Joffrey or Ramsay or, you know, I mean, Kristen Cole, they've really elevated up in House of the Dragon. I mean, we were watching the last season. We're like, God, we freaking hate this dude.
Dude, Kristen Cole sucks.
I mean, we're like, we hate this guy.
Give Arian some time. I mean,
they have certainly elevated him more than I would say you can feel of him in the book.
Yeah, he has a lot of presence on screen too. I mean, he just has a phenomenal Targaryen look, and also the casting of his dad looks phenomenal next to him. But between the armor, what he does, and his attitude, I think he makes the perfect Targaryen in this timeline, because they don't have the dragons anymore. House Targaryen has also now, you know, brought in other houses that are having children. We have the Blackfyres, all this stuff. You can almost kind of feel that they're not as untouchable as they once were. Like with the, someone threw a rock at him. I'm like, okay, that's right. Pretty crazy. But you know who he reminds me of? He reminds me of Viserys, Danny's brother. If he was in power.
Yes.
Same energy for me. So I think, I think they got him to be very hateable, very quickly, very efficient use of screen time, which I would say has been kind of the best part of this show, is it just feels like it maximizes its minutes.
I that was a note I took last night, and a lot of people were agreeing. And as I said, you know, the filler they're adding is fantastic.
Tremendous.
Because, and you know, I made this comparison last night, and just the first thing when I think of the word filler that comes to mind is like anime.
Yeah,
right. And which anime, oftentimes they have to create like completely unique stories that exist like on the side.
They're not, you know, canon.
They're not canon. That's not necessarily that they're all bad, but certainly they feel very far removed.
Yes.
From the main story itself. Whereas here, I said one of the things I like about it is, rather than trying to tell their own story, they're just using that time to expand the characters they already have to help the overall story. Like Dunk talking, you know, about, oh, are you going to cheat in the tourney? Right. Mm-hmm. Or can I place some side bets? Which is going to come back, I think, in season three. Right.
Yeah.
There's another tournament, and that's a big part of that story, is like throwing matches, or, you know, or just being good enough. Like, I love that guy. What's his, I'm blanking on his name, but the knight in the third one, not Fireball, but the other one, Uther something. Anyway, and he basically is like, well, you know, I'm good enough. I'm not the best, but I'm good enough to know who I can pick out and who I can take. And that's where I place my money. So like, very cool, cool character.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, this might be some of the best filler of anything I've ever seen.
Oh, some of the conversations that aren't in the book that they have are just amazing. Honestly, it's Fosway and Dunk, right? In the tent.
Yes.
I remember correct. Yeah. So Fosway and Dunk having that conversation. Yeah, so Raymond and Dunk having that conversation about, you know, how could a knight do this, let alone a prince? And he's like, why wouldn't he? And then goes on this rant, which, I, by the way, I also think like going off in that manner is another sign that the Targaryens aren't what they once were. I don't think people would have ever uttered that around, you know, Daemon Targaryen, unless they were ready to die. So,
well, you go back to real quick to House of the Dragon. Remember, they're talking about being a Targaryen. Wow, what's his name? Oh, God, I can't. Blanking on it, but in the tavern, remember, you know how he's joking about, I'm a Targaryen, although he actually is, but and then he's like, oh man, don't even say that stuff around here.
Yes, exactly. Like even in a pub and Flea Bottom, anyone that kind of goes up against the Targs end up getting, you know, their head cut off, for instance, in the throne room in front of Viserys, which was crazy, right? That was a great moment. So I thought that kind of led to that. But Matt, I was thinking incestuous aliens, which means that these people think aliens might exist. Like, aliens have to be defined, right? So does that mean aliens exist in Westeros?
Very odd choice, because we've often talked about in the books, there's a lot of, you know, you start getting a little more wild into some wild theories about the White Walkers, who are very different than they are in the show. They maybe were not created by the children of the forest. They seem to be more intelligent. There's a lot more to them in the books. And yeah, we've talked about this. So that's something definitely to try to circle back to and come back on. Regardless, we know that whether you want to call it meteor or who knows what, I mean, Dawn, the sword Dawn, which is much more prevalent in the books, the sword of House Dane, which is actually maybe believed to be Lightbringer. That who knows, maybe Jon Snow wield in the books. We don't know. But that is literally from a fallen star. So clearly it's from like a something from outer space.
So cool. I love it, dude. Personally, yeah. I mean, if you think about things like in Middle Earth or a Tad Williams series, and they were hugely influential on George, they do have like a species riding a ship, whatever it might be, like coming to a new land. And it feels otherworldly, right? So to me, I won't be surprised if that ends up being somewhere in the canon, especially with the White Walkers. So I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to phrase it as like they came in flying saucers, because we don't know that they would. No. But you can just be like they may have come from the stars. Right? Yeah, I mean, something sure. like that, that a medieval realm would be able to. Yeah, very odd choice of I mean, unless you're talking about illegal aliens and maybe saying, hey, these people from Essos don't belong over here in Westeros, you know, all that stuff. But
I mean, it could actually, right?
Yeah,
but then calling them incestuous aliens out loud, yelling it, I was just like, oh, okay, we're in a different era for sure. I just think they've really done a nice job of kind of showing that degrading of the house without being like over the top with it, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's very subtle. And they still, by the way, like, they still have you know, kind of aura and stuff. That's why their armor, I think they're ramping that stuff up, considering that they don't have dragons anymore. Like, they have to find ways of feeling elevated. So and also, you know, the further down they get, the more incestuous they've been, the more they're gonna be messed up, though they're obviously having children with other houses at this point. But
Yeah, I think, and I'll say this because talk just going off that scene, and we don't have to dive all into the Summerhall stuff right this second, but I actually think that, and I because I rewatched the episode today, and I said I think that the wave that they go through is so phenomenal in the last like 5 to 10 minutes of this episode, because you go from this scene in which Dunk and Egg are at the party and with Lionel Baratheon, and they're having that conversation about the song, which, by the way, first thing I thought it was like Alice Rivers. And talking about a song, I mean, who knows what her legend will get morphed to. We actually have no idea what happens to her.
That's a really good point.
It's not because George hasn't written Fire and Blood Part 2 yet. We have no idea how her story ends.
Was her name Alice for real? Probably not. Yeah. It sounds good in a song. And that, you know, so we could take that and say it's somebody else.
Right. So I wrote down some of the lines from there because I obviously didn't get to it last night because we were just watching it for the first time. But I said, could not be a better credit to her name. A story of honor, a misfortunate girl making the best of her natural gifts. And then talking about giving more than is asked. Her story, you know, that abides. The name is Hope, sir. It belongs to all who invoke it, which is just a freaking phenomenal, like, all-time great line in A Song of Ice and Fire, fantasy, anything. And it's so true to Dunk and Egg's nature. People were talking about Dunk not wanting the goose killed, like trying to protect the goose. And I think it just sets, they did such a good job of setting up the final scene where he goes and he protects Tan's out. Like, because it's not necessarily that Dunk was protecting Tan, is Dunk would protect anyone. That's who he is.
Yeah. Maybe he wouldn't have punched him in the face.
Right. Yeah. He may not have punched him in the face, but that's just who he is. So, but immediately after that scene in which Dunk and Egg are in the tent and they're talking about a story, like, Hope belongs to all who invoke it, right? Mm-hmm. And so that Dunk and Egg are having this conversation about ideals, right? And like almost fate and everything. Then Dunk immediately walks out and he sees, now I'm blanking on the guy's name, Plumber, the list guy who's running the tourney, and he's in a way presented with a choice. He's presented with like, maybe I should go along with this guy. Not that he didn't ask him to throw a fight, but hey, maybe we could play. If you kind of pick some people as who you want to go against. I think you could get some easy targets and win. So this honor, you know, this honorable choice, are you going to choose it? And then he sees the fortune teller, who is then presents him with essentially fate. This prophecy, you know, of fate. And so I just thought it was just such a cool weave. And then we go to the talking about the Targaryens and how bad they are. And then ultimately the whole show ends and you get, they just, it, the weaving in this episode of setting everything up, just even inside of this episode, is one of the best, like, foreshadowings, structure, plot structure,
themes, yeah,
in any episode of A Song of Ice and Fire television.
Yeah, it's so strong throughout. Like, and you're right about the themes of like ideals and fate, and hope. All that stuff's awesome, and I love how it builds off of it. And it leaves us at the end with one of the better facial expressions from Dunk when he realizes who Egg is. And remember, he was just told how bad the Targaryens are, and he feels some sort of way. Think about Dunk though. His knight died, right? Sir Alan died. He comes to this town. He ends up getting a squire. He has to sell one of his horses. Like, there's just so much changing. Like, could you imagine being Duncan? I'd be like, oh my God, this kid's a Targaryen. So there's going to be distrust, obviously, between them. I thought that moment with the just his facial expression was so good.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. I mean, the acting, everything in this episode was 5 out of 5. Like you said, top notch. The balance of humor and seriousness. Going back, some of the other things, I loved the stuff at the beginning with Egg and the horse and training. And then when he's talking to Dunk, I had to write this down. I had to ask people in the chat. And I was like, I missed it at first because I was just like, you know, taking down notes. When he says, is it weird that you have black little hairs growing out of your stone?
Yeah.
And then Dunk is like, it's weird that you're telling me. And it was just, and I was like, their relationship, it's so good that they're teasing each other. When they were when they were mocking each other. So fantastic. I have another note. When they're cooking, I said, I could watch this all day. I was like,
that could be
the entire show and I'm here for it.
Yeah, this is the exact tone I wanted. I knew it would be a little more quiet of a show, but there's still big moments. I mean, the jousting was really cool. The egg reveal. I mean, when you bring everything down a notch, when you go back up, maybe to like what we consider to be like mid notch, like mid level excitement for like Game of Thrones, it feels like a high moment, which is kind of what we talked about with the contrast of the humor and the violence. It's really magical to kind of watch it happen and see Westeros in a different light, which is cool. But whenever Dunk is like, then why have I been throwing up all morning?
Which I think actually provides a little credence to the scene in the episode one. Right? It's like, hey, man, he's nervous.
He has a weak stomach when he gets stressed out. I mean, I've had panic poos.
I think it's all going to tie into his like Aemon Targaryen, which by the way was somewhat mentioned today. He has a son who's a maester. And like the moment to Jon Snow, be a man. It's time for you to man up, essentially, is literally what he says. Kill the boy, be a man. I think that's what we're going to get to. I think they're going to really play up that Lionel Baratheon be tall moment when we get to the tourney that we know is coming. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay, Jimmy. By the way, real quick, before we go, the episode, before we dive into like the prophecy stuff, the episode is airing, I think it's coming out either Thursday at like Friday morning at midnight.
So it's Friday 3 a.m. So it'll be available Friday afternoon for me. It's 3 a.m. Eastern, I believe.
Okay.
So it'll be midnight your time.
So midnight my time. So we recording Friday or what?
Let's talk about it. I have to look. I think that might be okay. It might be.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe we'll just do a live. We'll just do that one live or something.
We could.
And then that way, I don't know that we need to do both, but certainly. I also think it was a very good idea of them to not put it on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. You can't compete against the Super Bowl.
You can't compete against the Super Bowl.
No, not a chance.
Yeah. So, especially this one where you haven't seen, I mean, the Patriots have been in and the Seahawks were in like 10 years ago, but I mean,
there's still a lot of that.
It's like we haven't seen these teams in a bit.
Yeah, it's been the most exciting NFL playoffs. And also, I don't know if it'll be over by 10 o'clock. Like, if you ran it right after the Super Bowl, it might not be as bad. But,
right,
you
but
know,
so many people are partying.
Yeah, I do think also that this show is just, like every other show now, is just going to have way more people viewing it after the fact. Which, by the way, this episode picked up right where the last one it left off. And I was thinking about that experience of if you were binging. Oh, that's going to be fantastic.
That's what it's designed. That's what all shows are designed for now.
Yeah, it's just, it flows really well, I think, one into the other. It's nice.
Also, the fact that people are saying, I wish the episodes were longer, tells you how good it is, because they are balancing it so well. I mean, they're jam-packed.
Yeah, but isn't it weird that people, like, can't see past their nose on that?
I know. Like, they literally could have done this as a two-hour movie.
Yeah, I will say, I think making it television show episodes does, like, the pacing's different of a movie compared to a...
Right, it gives you... Right? We're getting extra stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it's awesome. I don't have any issue with the shorter episodes at all. And I just see... And also, you know, here's the reality is we're no longer in the 2015s and 16s where a heavily CGI show or... You know, even just a vast amount of characters, you can't make those shows once a year anymore. It's just really not something that can happen. There's way too many shows, too little people working in the industry. So do you want Westeros every year? Yes. Okay, you're going to get shorter episodes. But then people are like, you know, I want longer, but they don't want to wait the 2 years, which I get. So you just, you know, you can't make
people. I'd rather have this format. I'd rather have 6 episodes once a year than the House of the Dragon format, which is like mega episodes every 2 years.
Yeah.
It's too far apart. There's too much. Because a lot of times I will wait until the show's over to even watch it. I mean, I'll like be like, okay, all right, maybe I'll binge that show now that it's done.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with if people want to do that as well. I think like there's a place still for like the huge mega shows. And if it takes a year and a half, 2 years, like, I don't know. You and I don't really get too up in arms about the long wait for the most part. Like, we're just kind of like, okay, that's fine. Like, House of Dragons back on this year, I don't even feel like it was that long ago. Like, do you feel like it was that long ago? Because I don't feel like it was
I do kind of feel like
House of Dragons. I don't feel it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't feel it. But either way, so I guess this is what I'll say. I just don't think discussing how short the episodes are, like as far as like, you know, a critique, I just don't think it's that interesting. Like, it is what it is, right? Like,
yeah.
By the way, change it.
The food looks freaking bomb, man.
Yeah,
I may go have to have an egg after this.
That's what I said, dude.
I mean, gee, egg man, that looks good.
Egg on egg.
Okay, let's dive into the big scene. So we actually have stayed somewhat spoilery free. So now we're diving into the hardcore mega spoilers. If you don't want to hear anything about it, click off, do whatever you want. Come back in a couple of years and we can talk, talk about it. Summerhall, the prediction, the fortune. That's what I texted you. I was like, dude, OMG. Like, that was like Hodor level for me. Like,
I don't know if anything will top Hodor for me. That to me is like Hall of Fame. I don't even know. But it was a sick scene. Also, a little birthmark on that face.
I got it pulled up here. We're going to have to, we got to talk about it. Hold on, man. Let me.
Yeah, maybe a blood raven, a little bit of a disguise, would you say? Possibly.
Well, it could be. I mean, that's what we got to talk about. So I'll get the picture pulled up here. I mean, so just what were your thoughts on it, real, before we dive into it? Because we were full spoilers last night, so.
Okay, yeah, I loved it. Immediately thought it was probably going to be, that mark right there. I'm like, that's so Blood Raven. I am blanking on the word that's used.
Glamour.
What is it?
Glamour.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, I could not think of the word for the life of me. So I think this is a glamouring. Also, there's a little necklace there, but I can't tell exactly what it is. I wonder, Matt, and we talked about this. I wonder now that we've seen this, if at the end of the season we get Blood Raven with the birthmark on his face on screen.
Oh, I think we are. I talked.
Yeah, I think so.
I talked about it last night. I said I think they 1,000%. I'm really curious to see if it's going to be the same person who was in House of the Dragon.
It would be interesting. I
actually really hope it is. Just that way, we've already had 3 people play Blood Raven. We don't need like 6. So just pick somebody.
I hope, but who knows at this point? I would assume it's not going to be just because of how everything works. But I'm with you. I hope it's the same actor. Now, I also want to say, if they don't show Bloodraven this season, in some ways, that's even crazier because they will have a callback to season one when he does show up, which would be like, you know, I got to go back and watch season one if you're like a new viewer, right? Like, you'd be like, what in the world is going on? I love this, Matt. And it's been, I don't look too much online, but when I saw some people saying,
people are a little like, mixed on it.
Yeah, people are saying it confirms Summerhall. Matt, why would you take anything at face value in this series? Like, these are super fans saying this, and I'm just like, you don't think that there could be some wiggle room in that prophecy?
Because I Summerhall, we know what happens.
Yeah, it's whether he did it on purpose or accident, and people are taking it as if it's on purpose. But there's also a chance these people are rejoicing around his death because Rhaegar's being born. Like, there's a lot of different things that you could pick apart. And also, if it ends up being that, okay.
Right.
Okay. I still think I'm a big believer of the Citadel being involved or the people around Egg potentially, maybe sabotaging the entire thing. And who's to say that those might be the people rejoicing around him. So for me, I don't know. I thought it was great.
So some people are pushing back on it because they're like, oh, they just revealed basically the end of the series in episode 3.
You don't know that.
Right.
And also, like, I saw some people being like, now, all right.
Also, like Ryan Condell somehow. So did you see that where Ira Parker said that like Ryan Condell gave him the idea or like he talked to him about it? So now people are like, oh, there we go. Now it's ruined.
I don't care about these people are out of their minds. But I will say that if it were to happen, I'd be fine with it that way. I saw some people saying, well, this ruins it for the general crowd because now they're going to go Google it. Do you think that these people aren't already going to Google? Like, this is what people do. Like, you didn't need to have that. They're still going to Google what happens in Dunkin' Egg. Yeah. Right? Like, that is, I don't think that's the only reason. I don't know. And I just don't really care.
By the way, so some people have also been saying her eyes are different colors, so they think it's Shira Seastar.
Dude, that, I mean, maybe. I mean, that's fine with me,
but
too.
That'd I do. That's cool. There's a character I think we will see. I think we'll see her, too.
Yeah, I think we could for sure.
I think we will. But the whole reason I hope that they make this, and the reason I think they will, we might get like an end credits scene in which this woman transforms, like unglamorous, into Bloodraven. Because Bloodraven is the connective tissue outside of the dagger, which we might also see, and also I think we will see it, and Bloodraven will freaking have it. But I think that Bloodraven is clearly already the connective tissue between House of the Dragon, Game of Thrones, and this show.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, Bloodraven. I mean, anyone that kind of sits in that role, whether Bran, like we've always talked about, like, where does that intersection end?
There's another character. I wouldn't hold out the possibility of seeing.
You don't think so?
No,
I think so.
I think we could. Especially now that they said they're going to do Game of Thrones season 9. You want to really hype up a show? I mean, they already did the Bloodraven vision. Have whether you do it in House of the Dragon or you do it here, somebody in maybe Bloodraven interacts with the tree. And Bloodraven could be seeing somebody in the future talking to him. And it could
season 9? What is a season 9 thing?
Game of Thrones. The Arya Stark show.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Sorry.
What if we see Bran in this and that's what he was doing in the battle for Winterfell?
I'm just saying.
Changes something.
I'm just saying that's your like Marvel cash in.
Yeah.
Could you imagine what people would be, especially like the casual people would be saying online? I mean, that's like everyone's going to be looking up what's going on, Game of Thrones season 9. That would be huge. But I 1000% think that, I mean, whether they want it to be Sheera Sea Star or Blood Raven, I think it is, because that's going to be your big connective tissue. And we know those two are like somewhat working together, but how do we not know about, like, it raises so many questions. I mean, could it just be some random thing? I saw some people saying it's Maggie the Frog. It is not Maggie the Frog because the timeline doesn't work up. You can look, but Maggie the Frog is about to be coming about at this point, but the timeline exists because Maggie the Frog is obviously she's there with Cersei.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look and see, and I think it's Lannister or somebody. There is a Duncan Egg connection to it. I'll have to get it pulled up here, but not Maggie the Frog. I certainly don't believe. I think it's Blood Raven.
I mean, the TV so show it could manipulate the timeline.
But if it is Blood Raven, then it raises questions and like, is he having vision? Has he had a vision already that causes him to think like this is what's going to happen to these guys? Because that drastically alters everything we know about Blood Raven and the Three-Eyed Crow. Because then it completely changes the narrative of, did Blood Raven go missing when he goes to the wall? Like, did he just happen to fall into that cave, stumble into it, or was he called? Did he know that he needs, that's the path he needs to go? And that's why he kills Aenys Blackfyre. I mean... Yeah. Matt, like, if it is because of the birthmark, we're talking A Song of Ice, like, all massive implications tied to that scene.
Yeah, it could
be not just it's not just a one-off thing. It's like it changes everything. It could be Bran. I mean,
it's so insane. If it was Bran, I think I would laugh.
Bran wargs into Hodor in the past.
That's true. I mean,
it's huge, man.
It is big. The only reason why I think maybe it isn't Blood Raven is because I feel like Blood Raven is interacting far more with Dunk than Egg. But I guess it interacts with Dunk too, though. So, you know what? I'm all in. Let's go. It's
also, by the way, even if it is just some fortune teller, of all the prophecies we've ever been told in A Song of Ice and Fire, that's the most accurate one ever.
Yeah, at least to the end of it.
So something's going on there.
Man, I don't know. I think that this prophecy, whether it's true or it goes down differently, because there's always subversions of prophecies in this series. Either way, it's so interesting to me. Man, I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I'm really on board with your idea of post-credits scene, her like looking at Duncan Egg walking away and then turning into Blood Raven. I think that would be a really good hook for season two.
Yeah. So I just want to Maggie the Frog here, because it is a Lannister ultimately, right?
I feel like that's right, but I can't remember.
Yeah, Maggie, because it's Maggie the Frog is listed as like in the wiki is listed as like a different character than this, just Maggie. But that's who everyone believes ultimately as it is, and I can pull it up. She's the grandmother of Sir Rolf and Sybil Spicer. She has connections to House Spicer. Yeah, so I do not believe that was Maggie the Frog.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. Sea Star is an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just going to have to go with Blood Raven here. I want it to be Blood Raven.
But I mean, think about those implications, man. It is massive. It is huge. It changes everything.
It really does.
And George is writing. Like, it'd be one thing if this was Ryan Kendall doing, like, you know, House of the Dragon, Ryan Kendall is just out there, like, doing stuff. I mean, George is so heavily involved in this.
Yeah, I saw in the interview where they basically said that he had absolutely nothing to do with season three House of the Dragon, obviously, but he's lasered in on Duncan Egg. Like, this is the thing he's been most excited about since day one.
Yeah,
it does make for great TV, by the way, like especially the TV that George used to write, which was 30 minutes long. It lends itself to the type of TV that George used to write. So I think Also, another thing, it just doesn't take nearly as much time as these other shows that have to like it, build other things up, expand the cast. The episodes are longer. There's more people involved. So it's probably a lot more fun for a girl. It's a little more intimate, I would imagine.
Yeah. Oh man, let me see. I pull up some comments here. It's just this episode was so jam-packed because like the Blood Raven thing could be its own. I mean, that's like that could have been the only takeaway from this, let alone it almost overshadows just how phenomenal the rest of the episode is.
Well, hey, I'll tell you what, real quick before we go to see what people are saying. Do you know any other besides Lady Teresa? Do you have anybody else like general casuals? Watchers?
Yeah. Well, I'll say this about Teresa. So she watched it last night and normally she just watches it. And, you know, I never really gauge her opinion about everything. But that's like the first time I think even with like House of the Dragon, because House of the Dragon for her in Game, it's a lot.
Yeah.
Like I knew this show would be more up her alley because it's a lighter tone. She's way more into this than she is House of the Dragon. Like House of the Dragon starts with like a crazy birthing scene. That's just like, you know,
yeah,
she's PTSD triggering, you know,
well, wasn't she pregnant when that was out? Right.
No, but it's
no. Cause you got married during season one.
It's still just a lot for her. It's like, it's scary.
I mean, totally fair.
Any woman, I could get it. Yeah. But this, she turned to me at the end of this episode. She's like, that was good. So, I mean, that's like a big, huge tell for me.
Yeah, Mrs. Nuts watched episode 2 by herself because I had to watch it before we recorded. She just sent me a random text and she was like, dude, this show is so good. It's like, yeah, it is, isn't it? She hasn't watched episode 3, but I know about 4 or 5 people, like casual, don't read the books, anything. They were shocked that Egg was
being a Targ.
And I was like, that makes me so happy. I know that for us, it's obvious. A lot of people, like Mrs. Nuts has already figured it out. That's fine. But the fact that some people are getting shocked by that makes me happy. I think that that's like part of the joy of this series and of television in general.
Yeah. So longtime viewer, by the way, he comments on like on all our videos, college chemistry tutorials over on YouTube. That's but he's boy. Great, man. He's always leaves us great in detailed messages and stuff. So he said, and so he talked about he left a comment on the live. Then I had a bunch of comments just from people while we were doing the live, and everyone was just like, wow, you know, fantastic. So he said, Sir Matt, as you've mentioned before, the acting and adapting is world class. From the books, I have always felt the characters genuinely care for each other, but seeing them at the market together, busting each other's chops, cooking, eating, and stitching together brings this story to another level. And he said, point two, they nailed the first of a few epic moments in this story. Egg's reveal nearly identical to the story. Top 5 episode in A Song of Ice and Fire, 5 out of 5.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I have zero complaints. Zero. Oh,
phenomenal.
Loved it. That's awesome. I love that people are enjoying it so much. It feels refreshing.
It does. I know it feels so different than where we were with House of the Dragon. Where everyone's,
yeah, if people are mad about like the whatever, that's fine. Because I still don't think people are like full sail turning on the show, right? Like we don't have that level of discourse, thankfully.
You know, looking back at it, and we can wrap up here in a minute, but looking back at it, and this would be an interesting topic, and of course they wanted to, Ryan Condell, to his credit, wanted to tell George's story the way he did in season one, but looking back at it, this might be an executive thing, would House of the Dragon have been better told if it had been like flashbacks? I think I kind of feel like a lot of people just got lost in like the crazy time jumps and having like decision. I know, but having the cast, well, that doesn't necessarily mean all the decisions are great, but having the cast go like it's kind of a lot because you've got some people get aged up while others don't, and then you keep crossing. Like if House of the Dragon had started at like season 2 with, now we're introduced to like this war, like the kid, like you start basically the way a Game of Thrones starts with like a king dying.
I was about to say that. Yeah. Well,
right. And so instead of Jaehaerys, you start with Viserys pretty much dying, and you do like 2 or 3 episodes to get you into it, kind of like they did with Game of Thrones, and then like the war starts.
Yeah.
Like if Blood and Cheese had maybe been the finale of season 1, it'd be like a son for a son. I mean, obviously the way they did it with Amond and Luke was also great, but man, if it had been blood and cheese and like the reaction to it,
we forgot that in episodes too. I mean, the dragon chase, it's awesome, especially the Baratheon. Yeah. I just love the Baratheon scene. But you know, I agree with you. I will say, so George is the one that told him you have to do it, which I'm not saying that to defend it. Actually, I think George is fallible. I'm not saying I'm not sold on the idea that we shouldn't have done it, but
it's a tougher thing to adapt just because of the structure.
Certainly. And also it's kind of cool conversation to think about what if with it. I'll tell you this, and this is one thing maybe House of the Dragon doesn't do nearly as well as Game of Thrones, is that Game of Thrones, when you get introduced, doesn't need the flashbacks. These characters talk to each other like this world has existed for a thousand years, right? And Ned Stark has a conversation with Jaime, and there's a little bit of exposition there, like, you know what he did to your father, right? And whatever. And that's fine. You can sprinkle that kind of context in conversations. It's part of storytelling. So I don't even know if you need the flashbacks.
Yeah.
You know,
that's an extra scene. That's filler, you want to call it. You know what I mean?
And to be fair, I think that D&D did a lot of good building around the scenes. I know people think they can't write it all, but like the Cersei Robert scenes, obviously a great one. Charles Dance's scenes.
They crushed seasons 1-4. They were some of the seasons 5 and 6 are still absolutely phenomenal TV. They turned it into the biggest show in like the history of television.
Yeah. And I dislike them, to be clear. I mean, yeah. I have my qualms, but people pretend like they can't write at all, which I do think is kind of crazy, but yeah, I just think House of the Dragon maybe could have leaned more on letting people piece things together through interactions. I think that could have been really cool, but who knows? It's hard to say. It's the toughest adaptation.
In season two, they did do a flashback because they brought young Rhaenyra back.
Well, you're right. They did. Yeah, they did do flashbacks. So
and Viserys, we have Viserys, like Ghost Viserys. That was freaking great.
Ghost Viserys was pretty. Dude, House of the Dragon's awesome. I don't know.
It's good. I'm still a fan. It will feel different. It will feel different when it's done and you can binge it straight through. Yeah. It's just that season two finale is somewhat, it's not nearly as bad as like the season one finale of Wheel of Time, which just like killed all momentum of that show for people. I mean, and then they had to like, they couldn't even recover in season two. And it's already been greenlit. We know we're getting all of it and everything. So that's beneficial, but this show, man, it just is able. But we've also said that this is like my favorite Game of Thrones story because I think it's phenomenal.
Yeah, and I kind of touched on earlier, but I do think it's made for 30-minute episode television. I think George wrote it very much in the lines of those parameters. So yeah, I think Dunkin' Egg's the easiest to adapt at all of it.
Yeah, I think Dunkin' Egg also, in doing it third, it is actually able to benefit from, because it is a lighter tone, even us hardcore fans find it refreshing than like House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones, because those are so ultra serious.
Yeah. Yeah.
That it if those other shows didn't exist, this might not be as good because it would just be like, oh, another, you know, fun story. But having those other things and having them be as ultra serious as they are, it makes this feel that much different.
It stands out. It has its own vibe, which is awesome, while still feeling familiar and part of the universe, which I think is important. And we have to always keep in mind that like these shows are going to be connected. It's the best show HBO's ever ran as far as money and viewers. It carried HBO. So when people are like, I don't want the shows to be connected, it's like, well, you're living in fantasy land. That's never going to happen. So, but I think it stands on its own pretty well. Who knows?
Blood Raven and the Dagger, I think, we might have already seen Blood Raven.
Well, I saw some people thinking the eye patch gentleman, which I don't think is Blood Raven. I think, what's his name?
That's That's Ryman, Robin Risling, and he's one of Dunk's champions.
I saw someone saying, well, is it though? Maybe it was Blood Raven. I feel like it would have been a little more, there would have been more, I think, if it was Blood Raven. I'll tell you this though, this show makes me feel good. It has feel good moments, and I need that. I really need that, because sometimes the world feels crazy or works up, whatever it is. This show picks me up a good bit. I love it.
Yeah.
We might get 8 seasons, Matt. Who knows?
Okay. Hey, no, that's fine. That's fine. We can leave it, because we're going to be back. I will certainly be back Friday. Jimmy and I can.
I think Friday preliminary is going to work. I just need to check.
Sure. And yeah, we can figure that out. But I'd say we'll do it live. That way I can like schedule it on YouTube and some people can react, since they haven't had that. So I think that'll be totally fine for that episode.
Cool. Very cool.
Awesome. All right, guys. With that, as always, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. We will be back with episode 4 of this freaking amazing, phenomenal show, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. We'll see you guys this Friday. And remember that winter is coming.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.